You are listening to the Fresh Take Network.
Welcome to Fresh Take, Joshua Adam, William Arbuthnot, with the one and only global sports, Moses Walou. Moses, Canada soccer is on the rise. It's a celebration, and I knew I had to have you on the podcast to talk about this fantastic rise of Canada soccer as they qualify for the World Cup.
I love the line that you heard from Milan Borjan, the keeper for Canada, and a few others that mentioned this too. You know, the soccer gods maybe said, you know what, Costa Rica wasn't the right time to do it.
Yeah.
You got to do it at home. And how cool was the scenes out in Toronto?
Man.
As frigid as the temperatures were, they came out in droves. And I kind of mentioned this in a line, and I think I tweeted it out real quick, but you know, the 30,000 felt more like 30 million out there. And yeah. you also think about like the people surrounding it. I had people that I talked to, you know, both, you know, coworkers, you know, and just people around, and just seeing the vibe around this men's national team, just seeing people saying they're excited, and they're like, we're bandwagon jumpers, blah, blah, blah. Cause they're like, we only follow during the World Cups and all this. I'm like, the more the merrier. Cause how cool was it to see from coast to coast, even people that I would follow on Instagram, you know, friends or just people that I enjoy and, you know, just kind of like piquing interest in, and you see them who are not necessarily most diehard fans, Josh, but people who were, you know, seeing what this men's national team and couldn't help but get wrapped up in it. And we're tweeting, we qualified, we got this. Yeah. And I'm like, you know what? That's awesome. And just kind of adding on to that was Borjan, another comment that he said that was great. And it just really, it kind of tugged on the heartstrings a little bit. But he's like, I remember the days when we only had 5,000 people show up, 6,000, 10,000 people show up. And to see 30,000 plus show up, sellouts almost every game we were at for their qualifiers this year for the World Cup, that was so cool to see. And I'm like, one of the longtime members to finally get an opportunity to do what he did, you know, could have forego his Canadian citizenship. And I think, believe it was Croatia. He's Croatian by birth, and his parents, he could have represented them and they would have had no problem taking him. Instead, he decides to represent Canada, and is just rewards, and it's so awesome to see for him and a lot of the players alike.
Another thing that kind of happened before we jumped on here today, on a side note, a reporter from the BBC, they wanted to talk about how cool Canada made it, and so a reporter reached out to like, is there any Canadian residents in the area that we can talk to? My sister lives in Cambridge, and she had talking about the Canadian soccer team and being awesome. A Brit out there. So it was cool. The English obviously had, you know, they're like, oh, that's really cool for Canada and everything like that. Meanwhile, I'm here. This is my selfish side, and then we'll get more into Canada. I'm like, what am I going to do if Canada faces England? What am I being a dual citizen? I'm like, what do I do? I hope that doesn't happen. But
and Alistair Johnson, because I asked him that question. And I'm like, because he said, oh, it'd be cool to play England and all this stuff. And I'm like, you know, I was like, you already qualified. So you guys are excited to see who you're in the draw with. Yeah. You know, it'd be cool to face like a Messi and you know, a Ronaldo. That's a lifetime. He's only 23. So like, imagine you're facing arguably two of the best players. And you know what he said? He's like, you know, for him, much like you, he's got English roots. And he's like, man, it'd be crazy to see like a Harry Kane and play against him and play against those teams. Yeah. Cause he's like, I know my family would just be through, you know, over the moon for it. So yeah, like I totally get that. And it's a cool vibe to think that we're only, you know, a couple days away from figuring out who Canada will play. And, you know, the good news is they pretty much sealed, they already sealed top spot in CONCACAF. So we are going
to
be.
That's just crazy to hear still. It's just crazy.
Right? Yeah. Not only that, but to remain unbeaten throughout the whole thing. And that was one of the things that John Herdman said. And, you know, you hear him when he first took over 4 years, or I guess going into this qualifier. I know he took 4 years ago, but like for this qualifier, what was awesome about it was there was this quiet confidence there wasn't like this, the brazen arrogance. People were like, all right, that's cute. That nice, 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 John. I know you got to help your team. We get it. That's what you're supposed to do as a manager. Understood. But he managed to get all 30 plus members of that team, the guys who come in through rotation, the main guys, to buy in. And that's truly remarkable because we all know the individual greatness of some of these guys, or at least emerging to, the Alphonso Davies, the Richie Larreas, right? I just mentioned Alistair Johnston. You also have, Sam Adekubi, thrown into that mix, and many more that I can't even think of. Kyle Larin. There's a who's who, Stephen Eustachio, of players that you're starting to see emerge who are young, extremely talented, and are so gifted to the point we're not just players that are like, oh, they're going overseas, that congratulations. They're actually having impact on their football clubs, right? Jonathan David is another prime example of that when he's done with Ligue 1 with Lille. Like, it's awesome to see. And all that talent to say, you know what, we're going to come for the collective. Didn't matter if you were a substitute. Didn't matter if you were in the starting 11. Everybody understood what the fundamental goal was. And then to see everybody, including from this countryside, right, to see him, like, yo, they got to believe, we're starting to believe too, and came out to support them. It's so infectious and so awesome to see. And I know you, like, you're a big Canadian sports fan, you love to see us excel on the world stage, much like our women's football team did over the summer in Tokyo, winning gold, what they've done, and with Christine Sinclair and the legend that she is. Like, people love to galvanize behind a cause, a group, and they understand that. The women did. They understood that very well and what it meant. The men are in that same boat now, and it's so cool to see.
Yeah, I mean, we saw it from yesterday with the celebration, like you said. We saw it in Edmonton with the snow jump, which is, I think, going to be ingrained forever for us. And I don't think, you know, at least here, we're recording Calgary, you know, when the World Cup happens here, obviously, you know, the Brits and the Italians specifically, they fill the pubs and everything like that for when you have these events. I don't think there'll be anything more Canadian this year because the event happens in late winter, like November, December, I believe. And the ship will be packed in the wintertime instead of being in the summertime with all these Canadians watching football. That part seems like the most Canadian side to me. And I think the crazy thing too is it's kind of 4 years before anyone thought this was going to happen. Because, you know, Canada's hosting in 2026 and they're going to get the automatic bid. So that's when we thought, oh, well, that's when Canada soccer will kind of have its scene on the world stage. But they kind of jumped ahead 4 years before anybody really, they kind of got to show everybody, hey, no, we're the real deal. Don't count Mexico or the United States in this spot. We're coming.
One of the things that always irked me about this men's program, or at least I think you start seeing, and kudos to the people at Canada Soccer to realize we needed some change. Jason DeVos was also a man who was a longtime member of the Canadian national team who took over there. And I believe it was more of a technical director role, but he definitely had an impact. You see some of the influence there. John Herdman is a prime example of a guy. And I believe, if I'm not mistaken, he's the first ever manager to lead both a men's and women's team to a World Cup. I'm just thinking at the top of my head because I don't remember any other time a manager has gone and maybe even just, you know, transitioned from, you know, from the women's program over to the men's side or vice versa and was able to achieve that feat. So I believe that is the case. But regardless, you started seeing the infrastructure finally come into play and talking to some from the former members of the 86 team that last made it. And there was a big issue. And even those who were involved in like the provincial and territorial soccer groups here, right? The heads of these groups, there was no real structure. They kind of did their own thing. Whereas, you know, nowadays we're like, hey, it starts at the top down. Canada Soccer has these certain rules, what we need for our coaches, what we need for our programs, what we're looking for in terms of building our programs for the men and women's side. And we're starting to see those fruits, and you're starting to see players saying, hey, Canada is now a viable option, because we've come a long way from the days of Owen Hargreaves saying, all right, peace out, guys. I'm going to go out to represent my own country. I believe I'm trying to remember if it was Jonathan de Guzman. I'm trying to remember the name right, because I know he has his brother who played for Canada, but I think it was Jonathan, the younger brother. And he ended up saying, all right, peace out, because I have dual citizenship in the Netherlands as well. So he decided to represent the Netherlands and went to the World Cup in 2010, I believe, and maybe 14. I know for sure it was one of the two. And it just kind of goes to show that you have players that have the option to go somewhere else, and that's understood, to now saying, hey, you know what? Canada is my home. I'm going to represent that. We see that in all the players, you know, that I mentioned a few of the names. Alphonso Davies is another great example of a guy who, you know, came from immigrant parents who moved to Canada and, you know, represented our country. And it's so cool to see that, you know, we have these group of players who are proud to wear the maple leaf on their chest and kind of move on going forward. And I don't know, like, I think maybe just from the end of it, it's just a lot of people are on cloud nine right now, including myself, because I've been a longtime supporter of watching this group, and to see them enjoy their successes, it is so cool to see. And the country is realizing, yo, these guys are legit. They're fun. And the cool part about this whole thing is they're not going to be happy to be at the World Cup. Atiba Hutchinson even said that himself. Like, we went in, okay, we got the World Cup. All right, now we got to do business. Now we're going to go out there and get through that group stage. And I'm like, that is awesome. You know, we're not going to be there just to fill in a bingo card. We're going to be out there to have some fun and do some damage. And I'm like, that's the attitude we need as Canadians. We know that from a hockey standpoint. We are so dominant and gifted in that sport. It's nice to see that Canadians are starting to emerge in the World Cup scene in soccer.
And I think a lot of people thought, oh, well, they'll just be like, I saw, you know, some people just like, oh, that's so great they made it. But hey, they, you know, I'll watch the World Cup, but hey, they're not going to do a lot there. Like, we already know. And it's just like, well, and then when he had that comment, I'm like, okay, see, they kind of have a good idea. And I think for a rooting interest too, kind of like we did, like, there would be Brits or Italians or, you know, people from wherever in Canada and be like, well, I would root for Canada, but they're never there. So I'm kind of going where my other roots are when it comes to a World Cup. Well, now it's here where your roots are to root for that team. And I do think there's a team that can get past. I mean, we'll see where the group goes. Who knows? They get stuck in a group of death all of a sudden and you're like, yikes. So it all depends on the placement of everything. But, you know, this team is shown as a capable team of, I mean, look, the Americans and the Mexican team are not slouches and they handle those teams rather well. You know, Costa Rica is a good team, and obviously we had everything that happened the other day there, but you know, it's not like they were facing slouch teams on the route to get here.
No, and I just wanted to add one more thing to your point that you made previously about 2026. I think a lot of people are like, okay, that's the year when we're going to do things.
Yeah,
I'm like, no, I think qualifying for 2022 showed that we earned our spot.
Exactly.
And so when we go into 2026, I think people will be like, hey, respect those Canadians. They're not just there to be a number anymore.
Yeah.
So that was one thing. And kind of following up on that, yeah, it's so cool to see that people are now, you know, donning that maple leaf. And to me, and this is just my guess going into this at the moment, that I think Canada is going to be the media darlings of the Qatar World Cup. I think everything's said and done, I think when you look at the team, people are familiar with the talent. People know that these Canadians are playing in top tiers. They're not just playing in muckabout leagues or anything like that. These are players who play on professional clubs that are very, very well known in Europe and even in the MLS as well, right? And I think it's going to be speaking volumes in terms of the Canadian talent that are going to have a lot of eyes on them. And perhaps maybe even club teams out in Europe and elsewhere are going to be like, hey, maybe we got to take a look at this kid, you know? And I think they're going to, you know, this player, and they're going to be like, yeah, we need more of these Canadian. We're pretty much like unearthing a gem, if you will, that there's this, you know, great wealth of Canadian talent that we got to bring overseas and over to our side. Kyle Larin's been having a fantastic season with Beşiktaş. We already know about Atiba Hutchinson and the greatness he's had over there in Turkey. You look at Sam Adekube was another guy. You know, I come mentioning these names, going back to them. You know, they all play out in pro leagues in Europe, the good majority of them, or play in Major League Soccer, another pro league. And there's going to be a time when we're going to start seeing all these kids, all these players, all of a sudden head over to Europe and test their knowledge and skill. And it's awesome to see. And I think it bodes well for us in the future. I know we got our own pro league on the men's side that is starting to develop young talent that has gone off to either Europe or players have gone to the MLS. And there's a lot to be happy about and pleased about in terms of going forward when it comes to Canadian soccer.
Yeah, I mean, I've got a chance to work with the FTF Canada, who I think does a fantastic job of molding young men and women in football in this country. I think they do a really good job of that. And I think, you know, after the women, you know, talking to some of the people that run that, you saw such a surplus of the women that wanted to be in that. Right. And I think you're going to start seeing a surplus of young men as well that want to be in this. And I think a big part of it is too, as you know, concussions go up, people get more, parents get more fearful of concussions in hockey and in football. And it's also just cheaper too, for a lot of parents to put their kids into soccer. Right. And, you know, kids, you know, see what happens, you know, with the women winning the gold medal, and they're going to see what happens at this World Cup qualifiers and going forward. It's going to help grow the game in our country and that side as well too. And now to know that we have programs like FTF and others to help develop young talent, it's a win-win all around.
And you also have to look at it from a geographical standpoint, and or at least from a financial standpoint. We have the infrastructure in Canada that some of these Central American countries do not have. Yep. But they're able to produce excellent talent when it comes through in the sport of football. Right? Or soccer. I don't know. I'm trying to not confuse any of your listeners out there. Trying to figure out. But, you know, for, unless I start saying American football, and I love the joke, it's like, how do you differentiate between the two? And you're like, well, you can call one European style kickball and the other one throw ball. And you can kind of get the gist of that. But going back to that thought, one of the things that I always felt, given our infrastructure, given how multicultural we are and the opportunities that are afforded financially as well as from an academy standpoint, like you mentioned, there's no reason why we should be no worse than third in CONCACAF. We should be, if we're behind the Americans or the Mexicans, I'm fine with that. But I just, given our landmass, given our opportunities, given the amount of people that we have, given the amount of, you know, we live in a multicultural country, that to me, there's already a foundation for football there, right? There's already that there, whether it be from the immigrants or those who have family members, because regardless of who you are, where you come from, everyone has played soccer at some type of level, right? Like, it's the most popular sport played in Canada.
Yep.
So there's no reason why we can't necessarily have the talent IDs to come out in camps and be like, hey, you know, take a look at this, you know, player and see what you think about them and how they can develop. And you're like, you know what, we can only need to take just a small percentage of those who are participating in order to really develop and mold into elite athletes. There's only a select amount you need. So I think there, this bodes well for us long term. And definitely. It makes just sense to say there's no reason why, given who we are and the opportunities provided to anybody that wants to play the sport of football, that they're able to do so and be able to excel. It's mind-boggling given, like, you know, how blessed we are in this nation to do what we can.
Yeah, you're seeing such a growth in other sports too, right? I think you saw the big boom, you know, and from the early 2000s with Vince Carter and Steve Nash did with basketball, and where we are for that now, right? And in the side with women on that side as well. Baseball's always had this nice little growing side, and now you're really seeing it with soccer, with football, whatever. And like you said, like, I mean, for the longest time, it was Owen Hargreaves. He was the name. It's like, oh yeah, Owen Hargreaves, he plays for Man U and he's Canadian. And then, you know, there was the questions a while. I was like, could Steve Nash play on the World Cup Canadian team? No, he couldn't, but that I remember there was a level when that was like a debate on TSN, whatever. It's like, no, maybe we got Steve Nash to play for Canada soccer, we'd be relevant, we'd be good. So that's kind of the low points of where we were for a bit with Canada soccer. And so I think having this point right here and seeing the growth and, you know, knowing where the future is going to be with everything, it makes everything a lot more rounded and makes you feel really good about the future of everything, of knowing, like, yeah, you know, 86 when they made it, I was 1 year old, you were a young pup as well, and now we may have consecutive World Cups coming on because of the foundation that's been laid.
And it's crazy to that, because, you know, the only guy that's old enough on that roster much like us is Atiba Hutchinson, right?
Yeah,
like, you know, he was a baby as well when the last time Canada made the World Cup. The rest of them haven't really experienced that and are, you know, relatively young, and who knows, maybe they, but what's really cool about that is, even though that they're young, they understand what they're doing. They yeah. understand, like, this is a big deal. It's not like, oh, okay, cool. They, you know, you come in with, you went between the ears and you just got to do your thing. For them, they fully understand and acknowledge it's been a long time since Canada's been on the world stage when it comes to the men's side of things. And they don't take that for granted. I think maybe it just goes down to like John Herdman, who I think, and maybe it's just me, like how did Canada get so lucky? Sometimes there are just certain people who are just ideal candidates. There are guys who are great club coaches, but maybe didn't translate into the when maybe they went into the I guess you'd say the more international side of things, or the other way around, or just, you know, they couldn't just find their place. But it just seemed, when you looked at his resume and John Herdman from an international stage, you know, coaching the women's New Zealand team, being, you know, plucked out of there and the Canadian women's national team, and just seeing the overall growth of what that program was able to do under his time in what, almost a decade.
Yeah.
You know, at least, you know, a good 5, 6 years or seven. And then, you know, you got a like for like almost combination with Beth Priestman, who's currently the coach for Canada on the women's side, and just seeing the demeanor and how it is. I don't know if it's quintessentially Canadian, if that makes sense. He just seemed to be the right fit. And honestly, is one of those guys that can motivate you. You know, I hear the guy and I could hear the passion in his voice. And
you see his stance, just the way he stands.
Oh, God. He's just like all of us. Like he's crouched down, he's like leaning forward. He's like, oh, and you saw his reactions when Canada had multiple chances to put that game against Jamaica early. And you just see him hands in the air. Oh, we're so close. And just doing
the Costa Rica game, even, right? We're hitting the post multiple times.
Yeah. You know, the best reaction there's got to, like, I know they do this all the time, but please, like, there's got to be someone, the broadcasters who are going to be showing that game, that if you could show a live stream of just John Herdman for the 90 minutes, you could do a split screen, like multi-view. I know like ESPN does that too, where you can get like different angles and different sides. Like, just show one that ISOs John Herdman at all times. And be able to just watch his reaction as the plays occur and see it, because it's phenomenal to see, because he's so passionate about the game. He loves the sport. It oozes out of him, and everybody recognizes that. Even when it came to like the broadcasters and talking about, I guess when we saw what happened to Kay getting those two yellows. The first one, he got away with murder, in my opinion, because I'm like, that was in the boot. That was my thought. And I was like, maybe we caught a break, even with VAR against Costa Rica. And then the second one, which, oh, such a dive by Venegas. It was so blatantly obvious. And to me, I'm like, he got a yellow card for that.
Yes.
So Venegas did get a card for that. But I know with Kay and his situation, that was tough, because, you know, it was just like it's the pettiness on, you know, both sides there. And, you know, eventually I think the referee ultimately had no choice but to give him a second yellow in that case. Like, it kind of gave you a break with VAR here, you know, half hour ago. But what's interesting about the whole thing is, like, you know, you hear broadcasters say, you know what, it's almost like CONCACAF is going to CONCACAF, right?
Yeah.
And John Herdman came out, I was like, hey, you know, some of those are the breaks. I know sometimes it happens, but, you know, we got a belief here. Everybody's involved. No matter what happens, we pick each other up and we're going to, you know, do what we can. And even with, he's like, the football gals were not on our side today. We had multiple chances. Even when we were down to 10 men, we were the better side in the second half, for sure. If not at least three quarters of that football match. And, you know, they came on the wrong side of it, but he's like, we'll come back. We're going to learn from this. And you heard that from the athletes and the players themselves. Like, Kyle Aaron was saying the exact same thing. And it's all, it's one of those things that's very infectious, and you cannot help from sitting, you know, watching it on TV to be like, yeah, I can follow this guy too. Like, he makes me want to, you know, aspire to, you know, not just be a better footballer, but you're like, just excited for life and the passion there. Cause people, when they see that, they gravitate to it. And then they start seeing the fruits of it. And then they start believing more and more and more. So a guy says, we're going to go, our mission is to go unbeaten in CONCACAF. And then getting to that point where you've pretty much reached that feat, it doesn't help, but, or it doesn't hurt, but really help bring that country together and say, we have a belief here. We can do it. And that's the cool part to me.
Yeah, just the way that people have been rallying together. I mean, again, I didn't think they would qualify before the Americans did. And we're, you know, I think the Americans have one tomorrow, I believe, where, I mean, they still might not make it. And that's the wild thing.
Well, they have to lose by 6 goals to Costa Rica. I don't know if that's going to happen.
Okay, yeah, well, that's not going to happen.
So, like, mathematically, yeah. Who knows? I think they're a lock.
Probably,
they should be fine. But, yeah, like, you're absolutely right. Like, I thought Canada making it, I really did believe when John Herdman took over and going into the qualifiers and seeing what he did, just getting into the, I guess, with the octet, you know, that they had for this year's qualifiers. I was like looking at roster, looking at what was in front of us in terms of the opposition. I was like, I could see us finishing third. Like I really did. I didn't expect us to do what they did. You know, I'm like, that's a good goal to attain to and aspire to. But it's crazy. Like, I'm in the same boat as you. Like, I expect us to kind of scrape through.
Roll it, right? I think that's the cool thing, too, for newer Canadian soccer fans is kind of this slow build, right, that gained along, right? Like, they won the first game, and people are like, oh, okay, cool. And then they had that big game against the Americans. Like, okay, cool. And then we have those two games in Edmonton, and I think that's where – the most casual of persons like, okay, what is going on? This is something. And you see all the people in Commonwealth and you see the snow dive. And I think that's when the collective side of Canadians are like, this is going to be something, isn't it? Like, we're actually going to maybe make it. And I need to get a board on this.
Two things. There's two. Actually, you know, it was one of those moments. And maybe you can tell me how you felt about it.
Yeah.
Or at least maybe there was a moment where you thought, okay, that's when I officially thought we're legit, we're going to go. For me, it was the match prior to the ones in Edmonton where they were playing in Mexico, Stadio Azteca. Yeah. And you're like, Canada, oof, you know, I'm like, it's going to be tough. I'm praying for a draw. You know, I'm like, that is the best result. We almost went in there and could have won it. Like, we ended up drawing, and that's fine. It was, I think, a good result in a stadium that is has been very formidable for years from any opposition, right? Not just the Canadians. And to do what they did and were able to, you know, almost come in there and steal 3 points, never mind just draw. That to me said, okay, this is a team that's not going to capitulate when the time comes. They're up for the challenge night in, night out. It doesn't matter who the opposition is. And for me, I've always felt like if there was one team that I would fear, at least from a Canadian fan perspective, it would be the Mexicans going into it. I think the U.S. were in a bit of a transition. I think they would qualify, and they got a lot of great young players. But I really thought in terms of the team that I'd fear the most would be the Mexicans and how they handled them. And that game, when you talk about those two legs out in Edmonton, and that game against the Mexicans and seeing them come out with 3 points, shocking a lot of people and realizing, oh my God, we're at the top of the table. That international window was the biggest thing for me. Those two results against Mexico, both away and at home, made me say, I don't care who you are, believe we're going to make a trip to Qatar.
Yeah, I'm with you. The Mexico trip was a big one for me because at first I'm like, oh, it's Canada soccer. Like, I'm going to watch it. And look, I'm also coming. This is coming from an English football fan. I am used to disappointment. Yeah. I am used to disappointment. Just a little looking glass.
Yeah, expect the worst, but hope for the best.
Yeah, look at Yasser's World Cup, Euro 4 years ago, the World Cup. We're used to many other situations. Ashley Cole, Google that. When you do the Mexican thing, the Mexico stuff happened before the Canada stuff. I'm like, this team is like legit. And then like you, I kind of started like taking a serious look at the roster and everything like that. And, you know, even when it was like a few weeks ago when Alfonso Davies wasn't playing for them and he was just watching and rooting them on, that kind of gave me a different feeling about stuff. I'm like, you know, for like the most casual fan again, to be like, they don't even need Alfonso Davies necessarily. They don't need their best quote unquote player. This is a good team that doesn't just have, like, all respect to Egypt, for example, right? Where they have one really, really good player. And if it doesn't go that way for them with their one really good player, it's maybe going to go ISO. We saw that in the World Cup a few years ago, right? It's like,
well, even just even more recently, because, you know, I do pay attention to a lot of the African qualifiers and a lot of what goes on domestically. They do have talent, but you are absolutely right when it comes to Egypt in the sense that like Mo Salah, especially the last window, they're up going into the second leg with Senegal.
Yeah.
1-0. But really outside of one moment of brilliance, and that involved Mo Salah in creating what eventually was an own goal against Senegal in the first leg last week. They outside of him, they really didn't look like the talent of the team. Like Senegal, who have their game, they're at home. I think they're going to go and go through, in my opinion, as one of the African teams to the World Cup. But that's exactly it. Like Mo Salah is such an incredible talent, but if you ISO on him, they're done. And I felt the same way when it came to Alphonso Davies. And I was like, I had a bit of concern. I'm like, once he's out of the lineup, how is this team going to react? Because you can easily be like, oh man, we lost our top guy. But you saw the depth, the team structure, and the players that were willing to be like next man up. And be able to perform and do what they did. Like Tejan Buchanan to me is arguably, I think he had a Gold Cup was his breakout, but to this, you know, qualifier was Canada's breakout star just because of what he was able to do in the wing, be able to do in the box because
there'll be a few Buchanan jerseys getting sold.
Oh, and well-deserved.
Yeah.
You know, but yeah, it's one of the things that's really cool. And you see like Richie Larea and what he's done and how he's like the engine for that group going forward, right? And being able to do what he does and draw defenders and be able to cut back and be able to, you know, get the ball into spaces for the likes of, you know, the Larens of the world or the Atibas of the world, like guys who, you know, Jonathan David, just guys who are just pure goal scorers. And they just have this incredible knack of finding the net and finding that space where they need to be. Yeah, it's so cool to see. And I think once Alphonso comes back and is healthy, you know, let the dude rest up. Personally, I wouldn't mind seeing him out for the rest of the year. Maybe get some, you know, his legs under him going into the new year. I think from a competitor standpoint, that won't happen. And they're doing whatever they can with Bayern. It's totally understandable. From a greedy standpoint, I want him to get those legs under Bayern and then represent Canada and kill it in November.
Yeah, and it's cool with him. Like, you know, you mentioned like the Mo Salah in Europe. You know, I'm a Liverpool fan, so I was, you know, that last World Cup, I was edged into what Mo was going to do. I wanted the route for him, you know, being our best player and whatnot. And then, you know, I was like, okay, well, if Egypt doesn't have Mo do anything, they're not going to do any well. And then that comes to Alphonso, and like you said, then Buchanan and others stepped up. And I think the good thing is too, you know, you see this with a lot of other programs, right? There's always going to be the pressure on Argentina. What's Messi going to do? Right, there's going to be the pressure on England. Oh, what is Harry Kane going to do? I don't know if there's going to be that collective pressure now on Alphonso Davies of what he's going to do. It's going to be more a collective, this unit overall, than just isolating on their quote-unquote best player, which I think is maybe Alphonso not playing was one of the best things that ever happened to this team.
I did make mention. I mentioned this earlier in the podcast. Yeah. And I said, if North Macedonia is not in there, Canada will be the darling.
Yeah.
And it's because they're playing with house money. They weren't even expected to go through this qualifier and do as well as they did and to make it. So for them, hey, you know what? We're going to go to, you know, we're feeling lucky. We'll go to the craps table and we'll see what happens out there. And until then, you know, it's really cool to see everybody kind of just jump on board with this group just to see where they're going to go. And I think the best is yet to come when you know, we're on this euphoric high at the moment and we're going to see something quite spectacular later this year.
So we're doing this before the draw happens. Mm-hmm. And the problem is that you can't even really get kind of a feel, obviously, for what the draw is going to be.
You know, you got to wait till see what all, you know, kind of transpires.
Yeah.
I think we're going to get a European team and an Asian team. I think we'll get like two European teams and an Asian team. I think that's where we're going to go.
It be like Japan, Italy, and like England. It's like, or like Germany or France. Yeah, yeah. And that's what you want to avoid, right? Like we're trying to avoid having France, England, Germany, Spain is what we're trying to hope to. Yeah.
Oh, 100%. But I think from a player standpoint, it'd be cool. I think, you know, honestly, my fingers crossed that we get, we're in a group with Qatar because we already got one bid. So we might see two Asian clubs come through and we might be lucky. So if we get into group A, you know, hey, you know, I'm like, finishing top two is realistic. Yeah, there's no knock on the Qatar's the people, and I think they even joined the last Gold Cup, and, you know, did fairly well.
Yeah,
you know, and qualified through because they were given an invite. I really do see, like, I think Canada is going to have a draw where we're going to be, you know, there's going to be a challenge, but I think there's going to be an opportunity for us to get through the group stage. Like you said, you know, no, there's not 100% way that you know avoid a group of death. But I think Canada is gonna have a draw that would be favorable, and that's just my hunch. Like, I'm not basing this on anything else.
Hey, we saw Iceland a few years ago beat in England, right? So it's anything's possible. Maybe they do get stuck with a Germany or Spain or whatever, and Japan, for example. And you know, this team is showing resilience all year, so now is not really the time to doubt them.
No, and a lot of these guys play with those players that play in these leagues. So they kind of know what ticks, what works, and not just with the athletes, but even just like the country and their style of play, right? Yeah. So I think there is a bit of a familiarity in that case for our athletes. Yeah, it'll just be fun to see. I can't wait. I'm going to be interested to see how that world, because the day before the draw, they're going to announce the rankings going into it and see where Canada places. Like, are we going to move up a few more spots? Are we going to get inside the top?
So where were 30? We right now? We were what?
33rd.
33rd. Okay. Yeah.
33rd. So we're the third best. Like, well, you consider the jump where we started.
Oh yeah.
At the beginning of the year. I think Canada ended up making the biggest jump and were awarded by FIFA for it. Like, saying the best, you know, just, we went, just leaps and bounds. We were, I think, somewhere in the high 70s, 78th or 79th, if I'm, you know, just if my memory serves me. And then we went all the way down to 33. Yeah. So given what we've done, I think the Americans are in the Mexicans are inside or just outside the top 20. And so, like, for us being the third best, I can understand that. And I think with this World Cup window and what we've done, I wouldn't be surprised if we crack the top 30. That would be marvelous. And I think that helps us out when it comes to the draw. Pot three, I think, is where we're going to go. And, you know, kind of fingers crossed. I'm just excited. I'm like, I actually have a country that I'm, you know, part of that has a vested interest in this, right? Normally I'll cheer for, like, the Argentinians because I love Messi and, you know, France, just because, you know, certain players that I've admired watching over the years. And of course, the African nations, because it'd be great to see success within, you know, any of the teams from the continent. And just to now say, hey, Canada's in that mix, it's so cool.
As we wrap here, I'm just very interested to see what the pub scene is going to be. It's one of my favorite things about World and Euro Cup time is to be at the pubs. And I wish we had it during the summertime. But I will say this, just, you know, coming slowly out of this pandemic, we have a chance, you know, with the hospitality side and, you know, obviously being in the news, you're seeing it all the time and talking about it all the time, getting hit so hard. And they have a potential here for a nice lawn Calgary Flames run, potentially, fingers crossed. And then they're going to go into Stampede. And then around the Christmas time, where maybe it's dying down a little bit, they're going to have this influx of World Cup coming in. So I think for the hospitality side around Canada, that's going to be fantastic.
And I'm wondering if they're going to do the same thing like they did during the, I think it was the 2014 Olympics in Sochi.
Where they opened the bars early.
They opened the bars early and were given exemptions throughout the country just so they can watch the Canadian men, you know, and I think the women were later on, but like Canadian men win gold like at 5 a.m. I remembered that. And what was funny about that is if you look at the matches that Canada could potentially be playing in, I think the times will range from like 3-5 or 3-6-9 and like 11 or 12. Our time, like, you know, in Maritime Mountain time. Yeah. So you're looking like at games can start as early as 3 a.m. And so for me, I'm just like, well, hopefully the bars will just stick around just a little longer and maybe we'll see what happens. You know, if Canada's gets one of those time slots for sure. And I don't know. I'm really excited to see where this country comes. Yeah. Yeah. Right.
It was 2014. I was practicum in Spokane, Washington. And so I was just, and this is when Canada won the gold there. And so I'm just getting pictures of, you know, friends and family at Brew House and the ship and all these places. And I'm just in my little apartment in Spokane, Washington, watching on a little laptop with a VPN so I can get CBC out there. But I was like, oh, I had FOMO missing out on that. So I'm hoping that, you know, we do have that and I can maybe kind of be a part of this time with this run here, because I mean, I think it's going to be phenomenal for everyone. As someone, you know, as a soccer fan that's been in this situation, as an English fan that's been to the pub and you're around other people that are rooting for your team. And I know we have Canadians here that have been, you know, at a pub rooting for Flames or Oilers or Canucks or Leafs or whatever, Habs. It's an entirely different experience than you'll ever have. So I would highly suggest to any Canadian that's a soccer fan, for at least, you know, if it is just three games, make sure you go out to like a pub or something to enjoy it with other Canadians, because it's an experience like none other that you're going to have.
I'm wondering if we're going to see if Canada does something special.
Yeah.
That we're going to start seeing people partying in the streets or celebrating, or you start seeing a lot more red and white flags,
maybe
just waving, or like, you know, car flags, you name it, and just gets the vibe. And
this is why I wish it was in the summer. Stupid hot guitar.
Hey, you know what though? I find it unique.
Yeah.
And again, we understand the reasons why it was there. Yes, I get it that, you know, there was a scandal, the bribery scandal.
There's other stuff playing with guitar. Bladder, yeah.
FIFA, the whole.
Yeah, there was
a lot of shady dealings going on there. And, you know, a lot of people aren't necessarily happy. That includes the pro leagues out in Europe, because, you know, it's going to like just all of a sudden derail their seasons and they have to extend it. And it just becomes a thing.
Plus, there's an excitement too as Canadians, other than all the shady stuff with guitar, which is terrible. Yeah. There's an excitement too. It's like, ah, oh, like I just want to get right into it, and like a little bit of a wait now.
Yeah. But I know the president of Canada Soccer said, this is great because it's going to be a party. Think about this.
Yeah.
This vibe is going to continue for the next six or so months. Right.
Yep.
And even it's going to ramp up once we start getting into Qatar, you start seeing the players start training, you start hearing the stories come out about the team. And then once they step on the pitch for the very first time in their match, whoever they face, man, I'm geeking out and,
yeah,
you know, hoping for the best. And I'm looking forward to, you know, heading down there and getting the opportunity to cover this. You know, it's been one of my dreams.
So are you potentially going to Qatar?
Well, that's the idea. Fingers crossed. Yeah,
that was my next question out. Was as a broadcaster, you know, I think one of the best that I've seen, you know, cover this, obviously locally here, but I think the two I've seen that have done a really good job of covering, I think Tim McAuliffe has done a really good job of promoting the game and helping the game, but you too, Mo's, not to, you know, pump it just because you're here, but I think you've done a really good job of promotion of the game on social and talking about it in both your endeavors on television and on social.
And respect to Tim McAuliffe's barbers. So, you know, there's something we have in common.
Yeah, there you go.
No, it's underrated. Yeah. There are a lot of people who are some hardcore soccer aficionados in this country. And I don't necessarily put myself into that category, but someone who's really passionate about saying, why can't we be the best or excel in whatever we do? Yeah. Like, you know, I think, you know, as Canadians, we have this complex where like, oh, you know, we just hope for the best. I'm like, no, like expect to be a champion. It doesn't mean you're arrogant or you're disrespectful. It just means, hey, you know what? Just like we are, people know the swag we have when it comes to hockey internationally.
Yeah.
You know, our men and women are killing it, right? When it comes to the athletes that we can produce. It's just, let's translate that into other facets of our life, you know, and maybe even from like in the sporting world, just because that's, you know, what I kind of deal with on a day-to-day basis. Yeah. Like to me, it's just something about that says, why can't we be the top team, or think of ourselves as, you know what, we are elite athletes. We produce elite athletes in whatever sport, and we're going to dominate. We go in there to say, we're going to excel. We are going to, you know, be a name when they hear our country say, hey, those guys are legit, or those girls are legit. That's what I like to see. And, you know, I'm just happy overall that Canada soccer is getting its due, much needed.
Absolutely.
Like I think our women led the way in that.
Definitely.
And our men are following suit. And just seeing some of the boys and girls who play the sport, they have members of those teams that they can aspire to be. And that's and it's fun to watch because, you know, now you're going to start seeing a lot of these kids. I like this is a, like much like our women's team did many moons ago with Christine Sinclair in the early 2000s, you know, in particular. You're going to see that with this 2022 version. That's going to lead to a gateway of these players. And we mustn't lose sight of what really matters with this win. And regardless of the outcomes that happen in Qatar, is that we build this for the next generation and the generations after that, because they are the ones that are going to be carrying this mantle. And I think one of the dangers that we ran into, and again, I think it's much different now because I think there is an awareness. So that's a good thing. But in you know, given more social media and the internet, you know, now it's much easier to kind of, you know, you can just Google and figure out, oh, you know, who a player is or, you know, what this country has done, that sort of thing. But back in the 80s, they just never were really able to take a hold and grasp and learn from that momentum and the experiences from the Mexico World Cup in 86. Yeah. And that translate into other generations, because we saw there was an opportunity there. And unfortunately, it got lost by the wayside. It got put by the wayside. And we started seeing this, like, you know, this doldrum for years. And it wasn't for the lack of Canadian talent.
No.
You know? Because there have been, and this is not a knock on those who've represented the red and white prior to, because there have been some tremendous athletes that were just never given the due that they deserved. You know, Dwayne De Rosario is the first one that really comes to mind. I mentioned Jason DeVos, who's part of Soccer Canada. And he captained Canada to a Gold Cup. Craig Forrest was an excellent keeper and had, you know, years out in Europe too, played in England. And, you know, you saw there was those bits and pieces, but we never really, it was very hard for us to translate what we did in 86 to flourish for over two decades. Now we got that group. We're starting to see that for the men, and for 2022, we got our own pro league that's able to develop these kids and send them off to the next level. 2026, we've got a good infrastructure bed going, a foundation going, and that's going to help us for decades to come.
And the cool thing is, before that, like you said, it's, you got a little bit of a ramp up until Qatar down in late November. And, you know, in that time, you're going to still have MLS to watch. You got the Calvary out here in that league, you know, to check in. And those Calvary crowds, I think, are going to be at a whole nother level, probably, because I think soccer fever is going to be an impulse. And then you still get the collegiate season, right, with U-Sport and with the ACC out here at the very least. And, you know, we've had some great U-Sport athletes in soccer. The women's side, Montana Leonard, setting all kinds of records at the UFC. So I hope that those collegiate crowds kind of get a little bit of the bite here of the apple of the Canada soccer fever and watch kind of the template that's been raised up here before we head into November.
Whet the appetite a little bit. Why not support local soccer within your communities? And you're absolutely right. Like, you know, and that goes elsewhere to all the other people who are listening and, you know, in this great nation of ours and being able to say, hey, you know what? I'm going to go check out some of those teams. Go check out some of those League One teams that you have out there, right? In Ontario, BC, and in Quebec.
And hopefully for me, I don't have to deal with the Sophie's Choice down the road. I'll worry about that when I get to that. When I get to that point of England and in Britain, Britain and Canada, I will worry about that when we get to that point. But for now, as a Canadian, it is very, very exciting for everybody. And it was very exciting to have you on here, Mo, to talk about the whole situation.
And one last thing to that note of yours, both wear red, so you can get away with a lot.
Yeah, you can get away with a lot. Yeah. All right, everyone, thanks so much for listening.